This is PhotoBizX episode number 303, and today we're talking celebrity portrait photography, the business side of that genre specifically, with a photographer who has not only assisted Annie Leibovitz, he's photographed clients like Tom Hanks, Denzel Washington, David Letterman, Sting, Serena Williams, plus so many others. I'm talking about Jesse Dittmar, and that interview's coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images, and welcome to this episode of the podcast. This one is going to be an absolute rip. I know you're going to love the interview with Jesse Dittmar, which is coming up shortly. But first, before that, I have to put out a big apology to you and to Linda, my gorgeous wife. I sent out an email yesterday, and look, I've done this before. I am so embarrassed. I look at the email this morning and I cringe. I think, why did I send that out? So if you have received that email, I did say that Linda is my supporter, my lovely wife, but also my proofreader. And then I go on to make a couple of terrible mistakes in that email. And it's not Linda's fault. She didn't have a chance to proofread the email before I sent it out. I got overzealous. I wanted to get it out yesterday because I was excited about what I was emailing about. I did ask Linda to proofread it for me, but it was crazy bad timing. She was in the middle of preparing dinner for 9 guests. Crazy me. Silly me, stupid husband me, thought that'd be a great time to have it read. She couldn't do it. She said, just hang on. And I said, you know what? I can proofread this. And I sent it. Oh, man. And like I said, I woke up this morning and I cringe. I've already had multiple emails pointing out Linda's bad proofreading skills. But like I say, she did not proofread that email. So I am sorry. I do apologize. Long-term listeners will remember an equally bad email I sent out. It was meant to go to my cycling friends only. It was about some bike bags that were on sale, and it went out to my complete email list. A total stuffer. I feel like I'm reliving that again. So apologies if you did get that email, and I hope you can see that the humor in it now. And more importantly, I hope you can see the reason I was excited and wanted to get the email out to you as well, because it all revolved around a giveaway for me to test Messenger bots. I wanted to run a competition, and the reason was I wanted to see if I could put some personality into the Messenger bot. I wanted to see if I could generate new leads so that you could apply this to your photography business in the same way that I have for PhotoBizX. And I wanted to assess if it was going to be possible for you to generate not only leads, but bookings and sales from running a competition like the one I set up for PhotoBizX. So Matthew, my eldest son, he's the computer whiz. He's the one that's been working on Ian Sim's Messenger Marketing for Photographers course. He's adapted a lot of what he's learned from Ian and other places, and he put together the competition. I helped with the wording and the language, but he basically built the thing out. And to say that it's been a success so far is an incredible understatement. I have been blown away by how this thing is going. Now, there has been quite a lot of strategy that went into the way I'm running the giveaway, and I'm going to go into that in more detail first for members once all the results are in, and then I'm going to share it with you if you're listening to the free podcast episode. So members, we will probably do a Facebook Live on this, how it all worked, and go into detail on how you can apply this to your business. We'll cover a little bit of that now, but I promise to go into more detail for you. But to give you some idea, the giveaway started on Friday. It's Monday lunchtime now, my time. And I can tell you the post, this is a post on my PhotoBizX Facebook page, has reached 10,200 people. There's been 2,900 engagements, 160 likes, loves, and wows, and things like that. There's 839 comments. It's fair to say that you could say half of those are from me, Matthew and Linda replying to those comments. And that's part of the strategy. That's how you get a lot more organic reach. So even so, let's say 450 of those comments are from people interested in the giveaway. And there's also 101 shares so far. But to me, the biggest lesson or the biggest wow factor, apart from those stats, is the way that the bot has been received. I'm getting so many comments and emails and replies saying that it's fun. It's the best experience I've ever had with a bot. It feels like it's a game. It feels like you're talking to a real person. It doesn't feel sleazy. It just feels like a fun thing to participate in. So knowing what I know now, so far, this should be, could be, can be absolutely huge for your photography business. I mean, there's no reason you cannot apply exactly the same strategy that I have to your own photography business with a giveaway. Now, you could give away your own services. So, and I have a prize, and it could be a, let's say you're a portrait photographer, it could be a family session with a 30 by 40 inch framed enlargement, you know, something like that. You could partner with another business, just like the Landowers described in their podcast episode, one of the best I've ever recorded in regards to the content that they shared. This would fit perfectly with that, with their strategy, where you give away something in conjunction with a business who's already servicing your perfect target client. And by following the same process that I have here, there is no way you can't generate leads, bookings, and sales from a giveaway like this. Now, in addition to the leads, this is so cool with using ManyChat and the Messenger bot sequence and making it feel natural and fun. I've got hundreds of new subscribers via Messenger, and that may include you if you already had a play and had a look at this. So you would have subscribed to my bot by participating in the giveaway. You would have seen as you go through the bot sequence that I'm asking for your email address, which gets automatically populated by the email address that you use with Facebook that's associated with your Facebook account. If you prefer me to use another email address, you have that option to add that, because a lot of people don't use the email address that is associated with their Facebook ad account, or their Facebook account. So you have that option there. And then they are the two things that I'm really looking for, you know, are those leads. So your subscription to my Messenger bot plus your email address. Your email address automatically gets added to my email software. So that could be MailChimp for you. It's ConvertKit for me. It could be MailerLite, like Kylie Garner talked about last week. So this all happens behind the scenes automatically. And I can tell you at this stage, 2.5 days after starting the giveaway, I have over 200 new subscribers that have come in via the ManyChat sequence. That's email subscribers. That's people that have not only subscribed to the bot sequence, but have also said, yes, you can have my email address. And there's plenty of times to opt out. You don't have to continue on with the Messenger bot. You'll see if you have a play with it, if you haven't already. But yeah, I mean, you can sense how exciting this is. The fact that it's fun to use, people are willing to go through and have a play with it, makes it so much more powerful. So I'm going to leave this here now, but if you haven't had a chance to see the bot in action, if you head over to the PhotoBiz Exposed Facebook page, you'll see the photography business giveaway, which is pretty much near the top of the feed. All you have to do is comment with the genre of photography that you shoot. That will launch the Messenger bot automatically. Then you're given a keyword to actually kickstart the bot sequence. And then you know, you're in there and playing along. And you can get out anytime you want, obviously. But I'd love for you to see it, to check it out, and have a think about how you could apply this to your photography business, because I just think this is going to be super, super powerful. And you'll also get a good idea how I've added my personality or some personality to the Messenger bot sequence, which is what I was trying to convey in that horrible email that I sent yesterday. So if you did receive that. Now, if you didn't receive that email and you are on my email list, it's because you've already subscribed and had a go inside the Messenger bot sequence via the Facebook page. So what I've done is removed anyone that has already seen and experienced the Messenger bot on the Facebook page from receiving that email. So I'm happy if you didn't receive that email. That's a good thing, trust me. So I've got links as well in the show notes if you want to go directly to that post on my page. But if you search for PhotoBiz Exposed in Facebook, you'll find that post pretty easily. It's also running as an ad now. So I'm putting a generous budget towards getting this out there to other photographers. And again, I'm going to share my results in detail once they're all in after the giveaway has run its course, which is by the end of the week. So I'll be back next week to share more of that. If you do experience or you have tried out the Messenger bot and you like what you see, you can build something like this yourself. So if you go to nicechatletsbook.com/PBX, that'll take you to a page for PhotoBizX listeners on the Nice Chat Let's Book website. That's Ian Sims' course, and you can read all about the course. And you can build something like this plus other things with what Ian teaches you in that course. It really is fantastic. It's changing the way we're using Facebook ads and using Facebook in general now with this competition. So nicechatletsbook.com/PBX. And if you prefer to have my son Matthew build this for you and customize it to suit you and your audience with your language and your the emojis that you like to use and make this sound fun like you, then he is available to help you do that, get it set up. He'll have a one-on-one call with you, work out what your objectives are, talk about how you can customize the sequence to suit you and your language, and he'll work with you till that's up and running. Set up the keyword. He'll basically be holding your hand throughout the setup until you're off and running. Now, if you're interested in that, you can shoot me an email for more details. It's andrew@photobizx.com. It will cost $200 to have him work with you one-on-one to get that set up. So the other option, if you don't want Matthew to do this for you from start to finish, the next best thing, well, it may be the best thing too, is to go and do Ian's course and learn how to do all this yourself. So it depends if you've got the time to invest to do the course and learn it yourself, or if you just want to get something like this up and running fast. And it also depends on your budget and where you are with your business. But Matthew is here and available to help you do all this if you want him to, and so is Ian's course. I can't recommend either highly enough. It really depends on where you are with your business. All right, I'm going to duck off and share a message with the members. I'm going to come straight back to you if you listen to the free podcast episode.
And now, a macro look at our last episode.
In last week's episode, the interview featured Kylie Garner. She talked everything to do with email, setting up an email account for autoresponders, how to set up your lead magnet, what to include in your newsletters, the best programs to use, which I always thought was MailChimp. She is a big advocate of MailerLite. She says it's so much easier. She does share so much in that interview. So if you haven't heard the interview with Kylie, get back and have a listen to that. And if you're struggling at all with setting up automated email responses, and that can be for newsletters, automated replies if someone downloads your lead magnet, how to set up lead magnets for different products if you shoot different genres, anything to do with email, it's all covered in that episode with Kylie, and she shared so much. Have a listen to it if you haven't heard it. You will love it. And I've got links to Kylie and where you can find her in the show notes for that episode too.
You're listening to the number one photography business podcast with Andrew Helmich, photobizx.com.
Alrighty, we're going to jump into this interview with Jesse Dittmar in just a second. If you are hearing this announcement, I just want to let you know that I do save a portion of the interview with Jesse for premium members only. It's the more business-focused side of the conversation. So if you'd like to hear the full interview with Jesse, head over to photobizx.com/try. And for $1, you can get a trial membership. It lasts for 30 full days. You can access the full interview with Jesse today. Plus, you get access to the full back catalog. You get to hear the bits of the podcast episodes that I save for premium members only, which usually means there's some pretty cool stuff happening behind the scenes, like big savings, special deals, extra content. Yeah. It's pretty cool. But if you want to check that all out, it's $1, photobizx.com/try. Give it a go. See if it's a good fit for you. And if you don't feel like you're getting your money's worth or that you will get your money's worth after that 30 days, simply cancel. All you've invested is $1 to see what it's all about. It's not a big risk. And there's a good chance that being a premium member will accelerate your success as a photographer in business, will bring you more income, more leads, more bookings, more sales, and help you develop the kind of lifestyle that you want to by having your very own photography business. And that's, to me, that's what it's all about. Come and check it out. Come and join the other members. Come and join me. And let's do it together. Let's work through this and help you achieve what you want to achieve. And you can try it out first. There's, almost no risk, $1. I'm going to go out on a limb and call that no risk. All right, let's get on with this interview.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Putting together an intro for today's guest was one of the toughest ever. There was so much I wanted to include, but it'd take up the whole show. But here's a little taste. He is a commercial and editorial photographer based in New York City, who has worked with clients such as the Washington Post, Rolling Stone, Vanity Fair, and Apple, to name a few. A lot of his work is centered around celebrity portraiture, where he has photographed people such as Tom Hanks, Denzel Washington, David Letterman, Sting, Serena Williams, and the cast of Star Wars, to name another few. I read that his career took off after an assignment to photograph an actress for the Washington Post, and suddenly he was getting calls to shoot celebrities for Rolling Stone, The Village Voice, and The Hollywood Reporter, and other magazines. But I'm guessing there was a lot more going on behind the scenes before that assignment. And on his website, he says, "I take portraits of people who are affecting the world. Artists, activists, journalists, athletes, politicians, musicians, and regular people too." And he also says, "I treat my portraits as conversations." I'm talking about Jesse Dittmar, and I'm rapt to have him with us now. Jesse, welcome, mate.
Thanks, Andrew. I'm really happy to be here.
Mate, what do you think when you hear an intro
You're just making me smile. You're just making me smile, man. It's really, you know, I like to say it's hard to sit down and reflect upon all that I've been doing in the past few years, because by the time I've photographed something and it's been published and other people know about it, it's way behind me. It's in my past. So I rarely get the opportunity to reflect upon the totality of what I'm doing for a living, and to hear you kind of sum it up there was pretty cool. It was pretty exciting.
I mean, one name that stands out, I mean, they all stand out, but Tom Hanks, like, he's probably one of the biggest names there that jump out at me. What happens when you get the call to photograph Tom Hanks? Like, is it butterflies or is it excitement? What goes through your head?
It's definitely a little bit of both. I mean, for someone like Tom Hanks, you know, the number one thing that is difficult about it is, for me as a portrait photographer, is that I've had a relationship with Tom Hanks since, I don't know, I was 8. You know, like, I remember seeing Forrest Gump in middle school or whatever, and he's been in my life for way longer than I've been in his. I start being in his life the second that he meets me. He has never known about me. He's never heard of me. And so the discrepancy there between our just knowledge of each other is so unbelievably vast that it's really challenging for me as an individual to just say to myself, I can't bring any of that previous baggage to my interaction. I just have to meet Tom and shake his hand and look him in the eye and have a conversation with him in the moment that has nothing to do with the relationship I've had with him for the past 20 years. So that's kind of the feeling. It's like a little bit nervous, but the nerves are more about performing and making sure that I do my job well, and less about nervousness of meeting someone like Tom. It's much more about, I have a really quick period of time. The Tom Hanks shoot, I say, I met him, we spent 90 seconds talking and showing him some of my work. So, you know, you've said this in the podcast before, you know, making sure he knows that I'm a professional person and I take professional photographs. And I spent about 90 seconds showing him my work. And then 10 minutes later, he was gone. And I had done 4 setups and had a conversation with him about many different things. So the nervousness is that, not, oh my God, I'm meeting Tom Hanks, or oh my God, I get the opportunity. I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity. But as soon as someone hires me or asks me or gives me the assignment, my first immediate focus goes upon, okay, how am I going to pull this off and how am I going to do it really well?
Right. So I'm surprised that you still have to prove, you know, that you're a professional photographer, that they can trust you.
Oh, yeah.
But why is it the case? Hasn't someone hired you that they are close to, that they trust?
Not necessarily. You know, I mean, every interaction is different. Every client and every job is quite different. But the majority of the work is working for publications or brands. And, you know, they've convinced the celebrity or the person to be associated with them, but not necessarily to be associated with me. Part of their pitch to Tom to write an article about him is not, oh, we're going to, it might be, they may sometimes say, oh, we're going to send this amazing photographer. But it's really more like, oh, you're going to be on the front page of the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And that's what matters to the Tom Hanks crew, not like who I am. So you know, I don't have a lot of influence on whether or not someone even shows, tells him who I'm going to be. You know, like the New York Times or the Washington Post will tell them who's coming and who I am, but it's up to his people to pass that information along. And honestly, I think often they don't, because it just can be negative for them. Because what if he says, oh, I don't like that guy, and it just causes problems. So I have a sneaking suspicion, based off of my years of doing this, that it's more like he walks in the room, this is something he does a lot, and he meets someone like me, and he just tries to be a pleasant person, or not. For him, he was very pleasant. And so my first immediate job is to prove that I'm a peer and that my work is good, and hopefully we're doing something that is going to be mutually amazing. And I need someone like him to buy in order for it to be good, because if they don't buy in, it's not going to be good. So I always spend, even with my limited amount of time with people, I always spend the first part of it showing previous work. If I photograph someone I know they're a fan of, I'll bring a print for them as a gift. I'll talk to them about mutual people that, you know, that I know we know. Mm-hmm. Anything to like get someone like him engaged in the process, because it's easy to not be if he doesn't want to be for celebrities. You know, no one's making them be there. So, you know, you have to get them on board, and that's a big part of the job.
Sure. How do you show them your work in that 90 seconds? Is it on your phone? Is it an iPad? Is it a printed portfolio?
I have an iPad with me, and I also bring my book. I made a book too, my first 2 years of work. Tom Hanks is on the cover of that book, so I didn't have the book when I photographed him. But at the time that I photographed Tom, I brought my iPad. Sometimes I'll bring prints, but usually just the iPad does it. Because again, when you show someone work, you're never really sure what they're going to connect with. So the ability to just like quickly go like, oh, I think you like this. Oh, I think you like that. Oh, do you know this person? And like kind of have a plethora of your work at the ready to kind of like, you know, you can see right away whether it works or not. You know, like you're showing them a picture and they go, oh, you know, or they don't say anything. You're like, okay, I got to go to the next one. So it's a quick read of the person. And also based on a lot of research, you know, I try to research to see who, you know, like Tom is the kind of guy that like knows a lot of the people I photographed, even if he might not know them well. And so I try to find out like, oh, who in my book can I confirm is friends with him?
Right.
And I'm going to put that person first. And then it's like, that is the ultimate unlocking of the scenario, is when my subject says, oh, blah, 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 I love them. Oh, they're my, I just was taught, you know, like then they're in, because they go, oh, this is a good picture of my friend, so I can trust Jesse now, is the ideal goal.
This is like relationship building on speed. Like
super oh, totally. Quick. It's speed dating. Yeah, it's speed dating for sure. Really, so, really quick.
I love it. So how much influence does your subject have on the shot? I mean, obviously they can dictate the way, their mood and how they look, but in the actual setups, the lighting, the backgrounds, that sort of thing.
That's a good question. I think, again, it depends on a lot of my client. If we're shooting like an advertisement, like I photographed Tom Brady for an aviation company, a plane company here. And, you know, there's a lot more kind of approval, and it also depends on the person too, on the subject. Like, I don't know, maybe like Tom, I don't know if he really cares, you know, but if it's an advertisement, I think it's clear that they have a lot more going on. For an editorial, a lot is in my hands. I would say, listen, Andrew, I always work within, there's always like a box I'm put in, you know, every shoot's a box.
Yeah.
And it's just like how big or how small is the box you're given. And some people, some subjects allow that box to grow when you meet them, and they're down, and they even might provide ideas, and they might even provide good ideas. And some people, you think you had a nice sized room, and it shrinks rapidly at every minute and gets harder and harder. So it just kind of depends. I find often that I do my best because I know how challenging things are going to be. I do my best to just take control as much as possible in a non-aggressive way. In a just, what can I control here? Can I control the lighting? Can I control the space? Can I control the clothes? Can I control who's in this room? Can I control what music's being played? Can I control my camera equipment? Like, what can I control, and try to control as much of that as possible? Because when things are out of my control, then I start to lose to the ability to make the pictures that you see. And it becomes harder and harder when you start losing control. you know, not to say that I need to be the person that does everything, more so that like I need to know that if other people are doing things, they're on my team. You know, they're part of my squad. So, you know, I love having competent assistants and stylists and makeup artists and set designers and producers and my agent, and all these people are like amazing, but I trust them and they know what my kind of goals and vision is. And so, you know, I consider that, you know, part of something I can control. But if I get a celebrity who is particularly surly, or if they have a PR person that might be a little more on the type A side that might be trying to make decisions, that's stuff that's like way out of my control. So I do my best to try to wrangle that in, you know, when I can. But it's a dance, you know, it's a dance to get the shot.
For sure. Last question on this topic, but you know, when you're photographing or being asked to photograph one of these celebrities, one of these big names, and you even mentioned there when you come into the room and say Tom's people are there, are you getting frisked down or are they checking your gear? Like, is there some, like, full on security?
I mean, no. I've been in the White House a few times.
Really?
as an assistant. And so there's definitely a lot of security there. It's usually locations are secure more than people.
Right.
And so, you know, when I'm photographing someone in a hotel room, like, the security is not, no, they're not looking through my stuff. Actually, funny enough, my next shoot this week, I'm going to a prison to photograph for the first time, a murderer, which is exciting. And I've never done that before, but I've been to other super secure locations. So I have a good idea of what the requirements are going to be in order to get my equipment and myself into a place like that.
Wow. Man, you've got an interesting job. It sounds amazing.
Yes, it's fun.
In the intro, I said that I read on your website that you say, I treat my portraits as conversations. What do you mean by that?
I mean exactly what it says. You know, like, I find that my opportunity to photograph someone is an opportunity to have a conversation with them while I'm taking pictures. You know, the goal of my pictures is the ability to represent people that are meaningful in the world in some capacity, and then put my spin on them and also make it feel like it to them, you know, to make it feel like you're also in the room with me and you're also kind of, you know, sitting on the couch or sitting across from them having a beer kind of thing. Like, that's really my goal, is to really have people look like themselves and feel like themselves, or a version of themselves that I think is the version I want to show. You know, that's the rub, is that I get into these rooms and I just start talking to people, honestly, very similarly to how you and I are talking right now, except I'd be asking you more questions than you'd be asking me. You know, and while I'm doing that, I'm snapping away. You know, I think that when people walk away, I get a lot of feedback often that, like, they just kind of, you know, didn't really realize that it was over. You know, like, it was like, oh, I just talked to this weird Scandinavian looking guy for 15 minutes and that was cool. All right, next, you know, like, that's kind of their experience of it. And for me, I have the opportunity to have a conversation with some really amazing people for 30 minutes and hopefully take some great portraits during that time. You know, that's how I find I get my best work, is when someone is engaged with me in conversation.
Cool. Am I right in assuming that you're shooting film or film, or are you shooting digital as well?
It's a combination.
Oh, it is. Okay. I thought it was right.
Yeah. A lot of the work that you probably see, the work that I'm really most known for, is film. But the reality is I only take usually like one roll of Hasselblad a session, and it's kind of like my personal project. You know, I'm there to do a job, and sometimes that means getting my clients' images in a quicker period of time than I could ever give them through the film process. So I make sure I know I get it. You know, I physically shoot probably 90% of my images, maybe more, in digital format, but I show 60 or 70% film.
Well, that's interesting. So hang on. So are publications and brands, are they hiring you based on your film work, but then asking for digital files?
I think they're hiring me for both. I mean, I think that's an interesting question. Why? I think the larger question is why they're hiring me. And I think it's because they know I can get the job done and they know what they're going to get.
Yeah, but surely a photographer gets hired based on the work that the hiring person sees.
Yeah, absolutely. Because this is what will happen, is that someone will hire me because of my film work or whatever. Then the parameters will start coming out. Like, my deadline is 12 hours after the shoot, or like you only have 5 minutes. It was really interesting because I came of age as a photographer in a transitional moment in this medium where I started as an assistant when I started assisting on film. I started shooting when digital didn't really exist, but it was transitioning only almost immediately as I came into this as a potential job. You know, as soon as I got to college, it was like, oh, what's this digital stuff? And by the time I was out of college and started assisting, almost everyone was using digital. And so I saw this kind of transitional spectrum also not only with film but digital, but also with the size of productions. You know, when I was an assistant, I worked with photographers that needed three assistants or they just couldn't do it. You know, I worked with Annie Leibovitz and I was the third of six assistants, you know, on set, and I never saw her go with less than four, you know, or whatever. But then my first jobs, the budgets were for newspapers and I couldn't afford to bring an assistant. You know, I had to go by myself. And so my very first shoots were like super, super low, small production. And then my experience as an assistant was giant productions. So I've been able to kind of oscillate between going small or going big, right? And so when someone comes to me and they say, Jesse, I love this picture that you took of Uma Thurman. I go, that was film. And they're like, oh, great. And then they start telling me that I'm going to photograph their person and I have a 12-hour turnaround and that I almost have 5 minutes. I'm able to set expectations based on all of the wild, crazy experiences I've had. So if they give me all these crazy expectations, or not expectations, they give me all these crazy parameters, then I'm going to be like, listen, I'm going to try to shoot film, but you need me to shoot digital because you need a picture. So we're going to do that first. And then we're going to go for film. And based on all the experience I've had in the past few years, like I think 5 minutes is really going to turn into probably like 10 or 15. But I can't promise that based on what you're telling me. So, you know, kind of like a long-winded way of getting back to your question is like, you know, people hire me for the pictures they see for sure. And a lot of that is film. And I still take film.
Right. So if you're shooting digital for one of these companies, for whoever's hired you, do you do everything you can? I mean, do you deliver a file to them that looks like film?
No, not. Well, it depends. Yeah, it's funny. You know, it's like, it's hard to say. Like, I can speak in generalities, but then I just also remembered a specific client. I've been doing this ad campaign for a hospital here in New York, and they saw my film book, and it was one of the best meetings I've ever had. You know, the creative director over there brought me in and, you know, opened my book for me and said, how do I get you to make pictures like this of the people I need you to do that for? And I was like, wow, awesome. That was amazing. I can tell you exactly how that needs to happen. And it was just beautiful. And we ended up saying, like, you know, when we first started that ad campaign, I shot half of it in film and half of it in digital. And it just became really apparent that the way to do it with all of the needs they had from a post-production standpoint was, we're just going to shoot this digital and try to make it look as much like my film as possible. So that does happen. But I would say a majority of the time that, like, I try to make my pictures look just like the best that they can within the medium that they're shot. So I'm not typically trying to, like, make digital pictures look like film, but sometimes it all kind of depends. I mean, my goal is to make the best picture, man. Sure. Like, and try to show the best picture. So sometimes that means it looks like film and sometimes it doesn't.
So it sounds to me, and I might have this totally wrong, but it sounds to me like you have this portfolio of work out there that represents the kind of work that you want to be shooting, that you're passionate about. But if someone hires you, you do what they want. Is that how it is?
No. Yes. Too harsh? Yes and no. I mean, it's a spectrum, right? So, like, I do what I'm able to make happen. So, you know, like, listen, if someone came to me and with all my work and was like, Jesse, I want you to shoot Pepsi bottles for a week, I'd have a lot of questions.
Sure.
I'd be like, interesting choice. I'm intrigued. I wonder why you're talking to me, because it would be silly. But that being said, like, if they had a good reason for me to shoot Pepsi bottles, I would be listening for sure. And if they were like, I want you to shoot Pepsi bottles because I also want you to shoot the guy who created the bottle or something like that, you know, then I'd be like, all right, now you're talking. Now we're getting to the core of why I take pictures, is the people behind the stuff. And so It's more like the work I show is the work I want to be making, and you get hired to take pictures you've already taken. So I often get hired to do the work that I show because it's the work I show.
Absolutely.
But within those parameters, you know, there's still within the scope of my work a pretty large variety of what we accomplish. And so sometimes, you know, if someone tells me that they want my work that looks like my film pictures, and then they tell me also it needs to be outside and needs to be on a motorcycle and needs to be actually in color and all these other things, you know, you're going to go, okay, you know, just like the Pepsi thing, you're going to be like, okay, I still have questions. And then it starts to become a spectrum of like, well, can I do what they need, also do what I want, give them both, show them the variety, make sure they're happy, make sure I'm happy. You know, frankly, like, is this a job I really want to do? Is this a person I really want to photograph? That's what it usually matters. Like, if they tell me someone that I want to photograph and they say they want my work and all of a sudden they say all these things that I don't usually do, you can better believe I'm going to do it because I'm also then going to do what I want to do.
Sure. And, yeah, that makes sense.
And get a great portrait of whoever, you know, of the president. And just having the opportunity is really the most important thing, because once I'm in the room, then I can do a lot of things.
Well, yeah, well, that brings up an interesting point then. So if you're being commissioned by a publication to do these photos of the president, for example, do you own copyright for the images that you make?
Again, it totally depends on the client. Every client has a different contract. You know, for the newspapers, you always are giving up part of your copyright for necessity purposes of their distribution deals with their news sources. So, you know, like the New York Times would never hire me if I was like, hey, I own the copyright and you can only use these images for this one article and only the New York Times, because they have like 500 newspapers throughout the world that also put out their articles, you know, as part of a distribution. And like, I can't go after them for like having their article being republished by the Des Moines, Iowa Sentinel or something. You know, like, you relinquish part of your copyright when you're working with newspapers typically. And then for advertising, you know, a lot of advertisers are going to try to buy your copyright. That's just a spectrum on how much you're willing to sell your copyright for.
But then would you retain some kind of usage right so you can use it for your own pub, like your book?
Yeah, I rarely give away full copyright.
Right.
I can only think of like one or two instances. Mm-hmm. It's super rare, but it's also for me, it's like, you know, even if I have to give away copyright, the most important thing is, does this fit into my body of work? Can I use it within the context of my work? It depends on what day you talk to me. It depends on what point in my career and my life I'm in. But if I can use the images for what I want to use them for, number one, first and foremost, which is my portfolio and like a thing like my book, then that's all I really care about.
Sure.
And, you know, and making a living, but, you know, most importantly.
I'm going to come back to the making the living part, but you brought up the fact that you were assisting and you dropped a lovely name there, Annie Leibovitz, that you were assisting for. What a name to be able to drop.
One of the many people I assisted for, and definitely the peak of the mountain of assisting, for sure.
So when you're assisting for someone like her or other well-known photographers, do these photographers know that their assistants are out there looking for their own work? I mean, and do they even care?
You're asking some good questions, Andrew, for sure. Like, you know, again, it's a total spectrum. Because I give talks at colleges about how to be an assistant, how to be a good assistant. And I talk with my own assistants a lot about assisting, because I was a professional assistant for longer than I've been a professional photographer. And I frankly know more about assisting than I know about photography. And at this point, hopefully that'll change pretty soon. But
I'm pretty sure you're over that peak as well.
Well, thank you. But either way, one of the first things I like to tell assistants is that being an assistant is not the same job as being a photographer. And when you're an assistant and you're on set as an assistant, you're an assistant and you're not a photographer. And you need to have that be your mindset. Because yes, if you're on set with Annie and she gets this whiff of your aura that like you're trying to be a shooter, it depends on your level of seniority, but you're probably not going to be asked on the next shoot. And that's not a bad thing. You know, that was my biggest fault as an assistant was the fact that I always wanted to be a shooter, and I was kind of like, it was just kind of like all over me, this like, you know, I don't know how to describe it, this aura that like I was really excited to be here just to learn what I could learn in order to be a better photographer. And it took me a while to like learn how to turn that switch off as much as possible, because once you do turn that switch off and you really focus on being a really good assistant, that's when you really learn a lot of good stuff, because you're being asked to do a lot of important stuff. And so once I learned how to really be an assistant, embody being a good photo assistant, that's when I got the ability to work with Annie. You know, before that, I never would have been asked, or I wouldn't have been hired. But once you kind of like succumb to the apprenticeship like mentality, then you get these amazing opportunities to work with some amazing photographers.
Wow. I've got to ask for the listener, how do you even get a job like that, you know, assisting Annie Leibovitz?
It's so funny. It's kind of like, how do you get any job?
Yeah. Right. So someone's like, dropped a name or...
The first and foremost, you have to want to do it. It has to be your number one priority. Is you have to have a goal. It was always my goal. It was like, if you would have asked me when I was 20 years old what I wanted to do, I would have told you then I want to work for Annie Leibovitz. And just like if you ask me right now, what do you want to do? I'd be like, I want to shoot every cover of Vanity Fair for the next 30 years. Doesn't mean that's what's going to happen, but it's what I'll tell you. And if you do that, and then you work really hard in order to give yourself the skill set for that to be realistic, and then you get a little lucky and you are prepared to capitalize on being lucky, then you end up working for Annie Leibovitz.
Nice.
That's really what happened. You know, to give it more specifics, I was a first assistant on this shoot for a photographer that I didn't really know. I was asked to be that person because I had worked with other photographers that his agent repped, and she knew I was a good first assistant. This guy was from out of town, needed a good local New York City first assistant. I was that guy. And then that agent also brought along a couple other assistants to fill out the roster. One of those guys, on the fourth day of the shoot, heard me talking about wanting to work for Annie. And he's like, oh, I know Nick. I know her first assistant. Like, I'm going to hook you guys up. And then that was it. Wow. And, you know, and so was that lucky? Yes. But I also had really pushed hard to put myself in a position to hopefully garner an opportunity like that.
Yeah. I'd never call it luck. You make your own luck, don't you, with things like that, or with most things.
For sure.
Yeah. In the intro, I read somewhere, and I said in the intro that you got this big break, you know, from one of these publications. Was it Washington Post? Was that true? Was that the big break, or were you already on the rise?
Well, it definitely was like a turning point. I think, again, it's something similar to what I just said with, you know, how do you find a job, is I had been working up to that moment really hard for almost 2 years, where I had been going on hundreds of meetings, basically begging people to let me take pictures for them. Anybody, please. And no one was taking me up on that. And then, you know, that 101st meeting, when I'm about to say, like, I don't know, if I don't get a job soon, I'm going to have to, like, do a real job. And then I leave that meeting, and a couple, you know, literally 2 days later, a photo director calls me up and says, you want to photograph Idina Menzel tomorrow? And you go, yeah, sure, I'm available. And, you know, like, let me check my calendar. And then, you know, I don't know what it was, but then all of a sudden, a month later, the New York Times called. And then a week later, the Village Voice called. And, like, they didn't call because I had done the one shoot for the Washington Post, but I think it was, like, all of a sudden, I just needed that one job to get me going. And then things started just kind of snowballing in a way where I don't believe that the editors saw my other work from, like, saw it in that publication. Was like, let me hire that Jesse Dittmar fella. I think it was more the culmination of a lot of work beforehand and kind of just, like, you know, a wave cresting scenario more so than like a you know. But that certainly was a pinpoint moment where I had quit assisting cold turkey and I deleted 90% of my income in a single day after being in the White House for the third time with the Obamas and a fellow Aussie photographer in Ben Baker, who's an amazing photographer and a guy I worked for many years, fellow Australian. And I felt like after meeting the president and his wife for the third time that I had done it. I finished the grad school, setting up C-stands for other people. And I had quit assisting the day after that shoot. And then for almost 2 years, you know, no photo shoots, really. Nobody really hiring me to do anything from being a photographer, even though I had so many indicators that felt like I was going to be asked to be a photographer. I was bidding on jobs for big ad jobs, even though I wasn't really a shooter. And I was, you know, was friends with a bunch of people that hire photographers. And like, it just felt to me like I was ready, but clearly I wasn't, because for 2 years, no one asked me to do it. And then that Idina Menzel shoot happened. And 12 months after that shoot, I had done 80 photo shoots in my first
full year. Oh, wow. That really did turn around crazily. So
it was just really wild. You know, I think a couple months in, I was like, oh man, I think that I'm a photographer now. I think it's happened. And you know, it hasn't really slowed since then, and it's done nothing but grow in a lot of ways. And now we're just, you know, on to the next phase, which is, you're a photographer, what do you do with that? And what kind of work do you want to make sure you make? And all these other questions that are much harder than, I think, becoming a photographer.
Wow. Let me take you back to that year when you quit assisting and you weren't getting work. You were going for these jobs. And I don't know what it's like in your world and in the kind of jobs that you were going after, but does price even play a part? I mean, are you doing things like, I'll drop my price to see if I can get this job? Like, how does it work?
You know, people in the world I'm in, clients that are good in the world that I'm in, they know how much they need to pay. Mm-hmm. And they get the photographer that they want. And price has, I still work for free. I still lose money daily.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, you know, this is the business model of the newspapers. They have 364 or 65 covers of the art section every year. If one picture is amazing, it's not going to sell many more newspapers. And if one picture is a failure, it's not going to lose many more subscriptions. It's a much lower impact single individual event. So therefore, it's not that valuable. You know, they have their rate, which is the photographer rate for anything in the newspaper, which I think for the New York Times, see, I don't even know what it is, which is how much it matters to me, honestly. I think it's $350 or $400, something like that.
For a cover photo of a section?
Yes. It doesn't matter. It could be on the front page of the paper.
Wow.
You know, frankly, like, I have to go back and look at the contract. I don't even know, because it doesn't really figure into my personal calculus. But the point is, for their perspective, is they go, hey, I work at this giant corporation. They've set this rate. I'm going to go try to find the best photographer I can get for my budget. And it just so happened that at one point I was asked to do it. And I did a good job. And then they asked me to do it again. And then the way I look at it is, the access to these subjects is so valuable that I'm not going to waste it by saying, wow, my budget's only $400, so I can't bring an assistant. I can't bring the equipment that I want to bring, and therefore can't take a car to the shoot, because then I'm going to lose money. It's like, no, I'm going to go and within reason take the best picture I can with all of the resources that are at my disposal. And because at the end of the day, 3 or 4 or 5 years later, like I am now, I have no idea how much money I spent on that shot, but I can tell you that I've gotten an ad campaign because of it. I can tell you that I've sold a lot of books. I can tell that I'm operating a well thriving business, knock on wood, right now. So the number one thing for me with a client, like a lot of the editorial clients, is, am I taking a cool picture? Am I taking a great portrait? And then I have relationships with them. And if all of a sudden a project lends itself to becoming much more complicated than normal, or yada, 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 we push to try to get our expenses covered and try to make as much money back as we can from it. But in the beginning, I would have taken pictures for free. I basically did pay pictures for free. I mean, for less than free. I mean, I was working way more than I was getting paid. You know, I was spending hours and hours on these images, and hours on pre-production, and hours on the production, and beg, borrowing, and stealing people to help me, and equipment that I didn't own, and all the things that you need to do in order to, you know, because if you don't do that stuff, then your picture is going to look like you don't do that stuff.
But what surprises me is, let's say you're Hasselblad, for example, you know, if you have a small budget, why not do without the assistance and the fancy lighting, take the Hasselblad and use available light to get the portrait that you can create? Why not work within the means that you have available to you?
Because in your scenario, one of the means I have available to me is, where am I going to be? How long am I going to be there? I don't have control sometimes over the most two key components to making a good picture with those tools, which is, I can tell this person where I need them to be, and I can tell them how long I need to be there, and I can tell them when I need them to be there. My first picture with Idina Menzel was, the Washington Post sent me to another photo shoot she was doing with another publication, and their people negotiated with the Washington Post for me to get 5 minutes when she was walking out of that photo shoot. So
high pressure.
I had to call the studio and convince them to let me shoot in the hallway, which they didn't want me to do, but I said please, and they said okay. Then was at the whim of, you know, what if I go to that location and all of a sudden their photo shoot's running late and now the sun's down? What if she comes out and, you know, I don't know, the lighting's not good in the room? I've wasted the opportunity. So I need to bring the elements that I know will allow me to get a good picture regardless of what might happen with her. You know, which is, I got to bring my lights, I got to bring my camera, I got to bring the help that I need in order to make the picture happen.
Why the hallway, Jesse? Why did you want the hallway for that shoot?
It was just the only realistic. It was like, kind of like a cafe.
Right.
It was a wall. I had a wall.
Fair enough.
It was the only thing they let me have, you know? But then I turned it into a picture that looks like my picture. And if you go back and you look at that shot, it looks like all the other pictures I take. And it's a really pretty portrait of her, and it's a portrait that I can put work next to right now, and hopefully people think they hold up.
Awesome. Mate, you mentioned a thriving business right now, and we've talked a lot about making losses, doing what you can do to get the shoot. How is it a thriving business? Where is the income coming from these days?
It's coming from anything that's not editorial work. So, you know, when I work with brands, when I work with advertising companies, when I work with companies in general, you know, I just did a pharmaceutical advertising shoot in Toronto a couple of weeks ago, which was really amazing. This whole year, I've been doing this big campaign for this hospital in New York City that's been really amazing. I will shoot portraits, like corporate portraits of fancy, like financial firms and banks and stuff like that, which is a nice day for me. So it's very cyclical where, you know, I will make 90 or 80% of my money on the opposite percentage of my shoots that I take the time to do. But then that work helps subsidize and fund the work that I do the rest of the year. And then the work I do the rest of the year helps me get the bigger money jobs. So it's like extremely chicken and the egg scenario. You know, people hire me to go photograph the CEO of Bank of America because they know that I'm going to walk in with a book with Tom Hanks on the cover and he's going to be like, oh, this is cool. You know, and they know that they can't hire headshot studio photographer that works in Park Slope that does high school pictures because he doesn't have that shot.
Got it. Can you tell me, or can you share with us what that means? So let's say this, the bank CEO, or just, it could be any job you've done, like a corporate style headshot. Can you give me an idea of how you price something like that?
Yeah, pricing's challenging. We price what we think we can get.
I love that.
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
I know your first book was, you know, from images or portraits taken between 2013 and 15. Does that mean there's another book on the horizon for 16 to 18?
So what's happening now is, I just got back from Italy a couple of weeks ago. It was really exciting. And what we did is we printed a second edition of the book that includes text and stories that go along with the portfolio. People are always, you know, jonesing for little tidbits about the shoots and about the people. And so I just revamped the first book with that text in the back, which provides, I think, a really cool experience where you can kind of like go through the book and then read about everyone, or you can kind of play the, oh, let me read this story, let me read that story, or like the, you know, that kind of thing. And so that's coming out in February, and people can go get the book on my website, which is just tothebook.com or TWOthebook.com. I'm very Googleable, Andrew.
Well, I'm going to add links to anything and everything that we've talked about in the show notes.
You can find me. But along with that, I'm printing a soft cover book zine thing that looks, it's a soft cover book that looks very similar to my first book, but with new work from in 2016, 17, and 18. And I'm really excited about that too. You know, just kind of an extension of what we've been doing, and another opportunity to get my work into new people's hands, and also to get it into people's hands that have helped me get here. You know, as a photographer, something very solitary about doing this. You just have so much support and you have so much help, and I couldn't be here without like so many different people being in my corner and helping me and allowing me to take these pictures, that I just get excited to print something and make something that I can then give to them and say, hey, look, we did this together, and thank them for, you know, believing in me. You know, it's so important to have people like that in your corner.
I'm glad that you got the chance that you did, because I haven't even touched on it at all in this interview, but your work is amazing. And the way you talked about it is exactly the way I see it. I feel like I am in the room with your subjects, and I feel like they're looking at me. They're honest, beautiful portraits. They are fantastic. And I implore the listener to go and check out your work. It really is amazing, Jesse.
Thanks, man. Yeah, if you follow me on Instagram, it's an easy way to get some behind-the-scenes stuff. Like, I write stories about the pictures, and I'll do a lot of Q&As, and you'll get people that I'm photographing recently. It's my favorite medium to connect with people and to show people my work. But I really appreciate it. You know, like, podcast is great, and I think that, you know, I was always jonesing and just grasping at straws for resources like this when I was 16, 17, 18, when I was, you know, forming the idea that this was something I wanted to do for my whole life. And so to have a resource like this out there for photographers that are just starting, but also photographers that are, you know, I learn a ton from your podcast, and I'm doing it. So I think that, you know, having a resource like this is really important. So thank you.
Oh, mate, you're too kind. It's been a real pleasure. Like I said to the listener, I'll add links to anything and everything you've mentioned, including your Instagram handle, which is Jesse Dittmar. I think the website is jessedittmar.com as well. And also, you mentioned the book website, mate. I, for one, am excited to see what you come out with next, and I know the listener will be too. Thank you so much for giving out the time and sharing what you have, mate. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Andy.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jesse Dittmar as much as I did. Jesse, again, a massive thanks for coming on, for sharing what you did. It sounds like it's been an amazing journey. I love what you do. I love the way that you shoot. I love the way you conduct business. And again, a massive thanks for coming on and sharing what you did. I can't wait, as you suggested, to follow up in 12 months' time and see how things are going then. And I'm sure the listener and I will have seen a ton of your photos out there in the world of advertising as you go from success to success and strength to strength. For you, the listener, I do hope you got as much as I did from Jesse. If you do have a follow-up question for him, if there's something that I didn't ask that you wish that I did, hit him up in the comments area of the show notes, and you can find them at photobizx.com/303. The comments area is right at the bottom of the show notes, and in those same show notes, I've got links to anything and everything that Jesse mentioned. I've got links to the things that I've mentioned earlier and that I will cover shortly. And you'll also find some examples of Jesse's fantastic work. You absolutely have to check out his website. And of course, check out his book if you get a chance as well. It looks amazing. And of course, if you are listening to the premium version of the episode, I'll be adding Jesse into the members Facebook group. So you'll have easy access to him there if you have any follow-up questions or you just want to say thanks for coming on the show. I've got one big shout out for today's episode, and it goes to Victoria Berkesel, who is a Brisbane-based maternity and newborn photographer, originally from Romania. And I love what Victoria says in her iTunes review. She says she's so grateful that she can listen to the podcast every night because she does a night shift. She has a job where she works nights, and she's been listening and learning from the podcast during her night shift. But how's this? She says, I've listened to 172 episodes before I decided to join him in the premium membership. I love it. 172 episodes. And now she says, I've got to go back and hear the entire interviews to put these things into practice. There is so much. She's going to start with Facebook ads and she's going to keep us posted on how she's going. So just fantastic to have you a part of it now, Victoria. I know you've been listening for a long time, but I know that you are going to love the premium membership. I've seen your first post inside the members Facebook group today, sharing some of your fantastic, beautiful, gorgeous newborn photography and introducing yourself. So it's great to see you there already. I know you're going to love the community. You're going to love the help that you get from other members. And I know you're going to enjoy the extra content from the interviews too. So it's been fun keeping you company during your night shift.
Photo Biz Exposed. Interviews with photographers to help you build a better photography business.
Just one quick announcement before we close out today's episode. You would be familiar with the name Nicole Begley if you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time. Nicole is the super talented pet photographer that shared her fantastic strategy for upselling in your sales sessions by rewarding your clients when they reach a certain level. It's a strategy that I'm now sharing and utilizing with my coaching clients and mastermind groups. I absolutely love this idea. Anyway, Nicole is about to launch her business of pet photography again for 2019. She has a free intro course, which is called Starving Artist to Well-Compensated Creator. And I've got a link to it in the show notes for today's episode. It's totally free. It'll give you an introduction and an idea of the full course that's coming out and will be kicking off. Well, I think the registration's kicking off in a week's time. And the beauty is, if you are a pet photographer, if you use the link in the show notes and you are a premium member, you'll be getting 40% reimbursed if you sign up for the course. But you do have to use my link, which is available in the show notes, to sign up. Check out the Starving Artist free course to see if it's a good fit for you. Again, this is pet photographer specific. And if you are a premium member and you do purchase via my link, as we always do, if I can, I give you the best rebate I possibly can. In this case, I can give you back 40% once the actual course goes live. So if you want more details about that and you're a premium member, you can ask inside the members Facebook group, or you can shoot me an email, andrew@photobizx.com. But again, links are in the show notes and they are at photobizx.com/303 for this week. Alrighty, that is it for this episode of the podcast. It's been a massive last week. This week's looking to be equally big. Matthew, Linda and I are spending hours replying to comments on this giveaway. I've also been trialing pretty cool strategy, which I'm going to be sharing with members inside the members Facebook group. We might do a Facebook Live or a Zoom webinar style class, if you like, on that. The members, they'll be familiar, particularly if they're active inside the members Facebook group, with a post that I put up, and that I've been sending them some retargeted ads, and they've been letting me know that they're seeing those ads. They're going out in order, just like we've been talking about in that training. So they're actually getting a good idea of exactly what we've been talking about in the podcast and in the other webinars that I've held on how you can bring a lead into your Facebook audience and then serve that lead content in order to build your relationship, build your likability and your trust, which will then put you in a fantastic position to have them either book you or for you to be going on and making offers and putting calls to action in your follow-up ads. So yeah, we're going to go into more detail on that and the strategies that I've been playing with inside the members Facebook group. So keep an eye out for that if you are a member. And of course, I'm sure it will drip down to you if you are listening to the free podcast episode in the future as well. Alrighty, that is it for me. Have a fantastic week. I will chat to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.